Welcome to 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you listen to the world. I am Kelly McLean, and this is a very special episode of Bitchsplaining. I am airing this show shortly before Veterans Day as a way of honoring the veterans in my life and all the many millions of veterans I don't know. I feel like it's a holiday that gets sort of passed over a bit in favor of holidays that are, you know, more fun or have more fireworks or more barbecues or whatever. And I really feel like it deserves more attention. I also have some people in my life that are veterans, and I feel like their stories deserve to be heard. So I wanted to do a very special show for this reason. First, let's just talk a little bit about what Veterans Day is. It originated as Armistice Day on November 11th, 1919. That's 11-11-1919, which is very interesting numerologically. That's the end, the official end of World War I. Congress passed a resolution in 1926 for an annual observance, and in 1938 it became a national holiday. So it occurs on November 11th every year in the United States to honor the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month of 1918, which signaled the end of World War I. In 1954, Dwight D. Eisenhower changed the name of the holiday from Armistice Day to Veterans Day. This is interesting. I did not know this. In 1968, the Uniform Holidays Bill was passed by Congress, who are apparently always screwing things up, which moved the celebration of Veterans Day to the fourth Monday in October. The law went into effect in 1971, but in 1975, Gerald Ford returned Veterans Day to November 11th due to the important historical significance of the date, which, good job, Ford. Veterans Day commemorates veterans of all wars, living and dead. Other countries also have commemorative holidays around the end to mark the end of World War I. Most of those are on or near November 11th. In Europe and Great Britain, they observe a two minutes of silence at 11 a.m. every November 11th. So this is something that is marked in most of the countries that were participating in World War I. As of 2018, there were 18.2 million living veterans that served in at least one war. That's U.S. veterans. 9% of veterans are women. 7 million veterans served in Vietnam. 7 million veterans served in the Persian Gulf. As of 2018, there were still many veterans of World War II still living. That generation, as we know, is dwindling. The greatest generation, as they're called. And there's many more statistics, but mostly I felt like it was just important to give this day a little bit of attention. It just doesn't really get much. There's, the odd parade here and there. They do a service at Arlington National Cemetery in Washington, D.C. But, mostly we just kind of overlook it. So the reason I wanted to do this interview is because my love, Patrick, I don't really share a lot of my personal life on the air. I make really vague references to it here and there. So this is kind of stepping out of my comfort zone a little bit for me. My boyfriend, Patrick, is a veteran. He's also a fireman, and he works for the Department of Defense overseas. So he's kind of a badass, and needless to say, I'm extremely proud of him. His experience in the Gulf War in 1990 is profound. It was life-changing. He's remarkable in the way that he has dealt with a lot of things that life has thrown at him. But this in particular is just, it's really beautiful and difficult for me to hear this story, to imagine him in those circumstances, to imagine him running through gunfire. it gets a little emotional. I will drop a little bit of a trigger warning here. for anyone who's sensitive to these topics, this conversation with Pat does contain some descriptions of war, of battle, of death. And so if that's a sensitive topic for you, you might want to not listen. But I hope that most of you will be able to, because it's really beautiful, not just because I love him, but because it's remarkable. And his story is just one of millions. And hopefully you can't hear the neighbor kids screaming right now, but you probably could. And you know what? It's a free country because of people like Pat. So the kids can scream. So anyway, I've heard bits and pieces of his story, but this was a first for me to sit down with him and interview him directly. He's been interviewed by a couple of different people, and there's a book in the works about this particular battle. You can look up this battle. It's called the Battle of Easting 73. It was a tank battle that took place against Iraq's sort of elite tank regime. And it was definitely a turning point in the Gulf War. It was a great defeat against Iraq for us. We had a massive victory in this battle, but not without, of course, casualties. And Pat witnessed that firsthand. And, you know, it's an ongoing process for him to, this is how many years ago? I don't like doing that math because I'm old, but you know, he's still healing from that. And some of his brothers from that time, his army brothers, are still healing from that even more profoundly. Some of them really struggle with some of the things that they went through. Pat has a real passion for bringing awareness to PTSD among veterans and among firefighters and first responders in general. And suicide is a big theme in the circles where he runs and the people he keeps company with. Firefighters have a very high suicide rate, and soldiers returning from Afghanistan are really suffering. They've been on multiple tours. There's so many things about this that need attention, and so suicide awareness is another one. He's very passionate about that, and as it happens, I have always been very passionate about that, so I'm happy to offer my show as a way of raising awareness for all of that. Mostly, I think he and I really just wanted to drive home that it's okay to acknowledge their service. It's okay to say thank you, and we should feel grateful. Regardless of how you feel about the current politics of this country, regardless of how you feel about the parties and all of the nonsense that's going on in DC at any given time, or any state capital for that matter. I'm in California, so we have plenty of nonsense. Regardless of how you feel about any of that, these people really do go to battle for us so that we can maintain the freedom that we experience every day. The reason that I can do this radio show and say whatever I want. The reason we enjoy everything we enjoy. So with a lot of gratitude and humility, I am happy to give you this interview with Patrick.
I have a question for you. Are you a bit dangerous? Perhaps ruthless? Mysterious? Seductive? If you are, then we are a perfect match. Hello, this is Dr. Elisa from the Dr. Elisa Show, Monday mornings, 9 a.m. Pacific, here on 1-2 Radio. We talk about manifesting life not through goal setting, but through adventure, through using your life as a canvas, as a magic spell, and drawing to you all that you desire. Join me and build the prosperous life you crave.
This is Kelly Whetstone, inviting you to step out of the demands of the world and into the healing sanctuary of the infinite self. Empowerment Meditations, Tuesday evenings at 5 p.m. Pacific on 12academy.com. 20 minutes of peace.
So I'm super stoked to have a very special interview with one of my favoriteest people ever. And I wonder how many superlatives I can squeeze into one sentence. But anyway, this is someone that I truly admire, adore, and I really wanted to share this story with you all. But it isn't my story to tell. So I've asked him to do something he rarely does, come on the show and talk about himself for a few minutes. Welcome to the Blanket Fort, babe.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. So this is the sexiest fireman ever, my very own Patrick, for those of you who have no idea what's happening right now.
Is that a superlative?
The word Patrick, yeah.
No, the sexiest person you know.
Yes, of course. So anyway, I know you don't like to really make a big deal out of this stuff, but I appreciate you coming on. Oh, I forgot my sound effect, damn it. Welcome to the Blanket Fort, babe.
Thank you. You get
applause and stuff.
Hey, what do you know?
Good stuff. So, yeah, on the one hand, I didn't want this to be uncomfortable for you. And on the other hand, I don't want this to seem weirdly self-congratulatory on my part simply because I'm in love with you. I don't feel like I have the right to really tell your story and brag about you, even though I really want to often. I didn't do anything here except meet you. However, I think you're a badass, and you're also truly one of the most humble men I've maybe ever met. It's another thing that you have in common with my dad, which is interesting. And there have been many times in certain conversations on this show and in life where I've wanted to talk about your experiences, but like I said, they aren't mine to tell. So I picked this week, November 7th, because A, it's my parents' anniversary, and B, it's a few days before Veterans Day in the U.S. So I just wanted you to maybe share some of your experiences as a combat veteran, because it truly is a remarkable story that still makes my jaw kind of drop. So we good with that?
Yes. I think you're embellishing a little bit, but that's okay.
I am not. See, you're so humble. I haven't even said anything and you're already. All right. So set the scene. What year was this? 92, 93?
No, 90. We left 90. Germany. Well,
that's
we
right.
Left. Yeah. We deployed. We found out that we were leaving. Well, we found out about the invasion of Iraq. I mean, I'm sorry, the invasion of Kuwait from Iraq by Iraq. When we were out training in a gunnery exercise in Grafenwöhr, Germany, we found out about it. We really weren't concerned too much. The unit I was in was the 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment, and it was a border unit. East and West Germany were still in place at the time, so they had the inner German border, and so we were pretty much not going to go anywhere as far as we were thinking at the time. We were there to stop the Russians and the East Germans. But as you know, we were doing border patrols and stuff like that. Well, when the wall started to come down, the units were not as needed there, obviously. And we found out on the news that we were going with our whole corps, 7th Corps from Germany. We found out December 5th, I believe. And then we heard it. Well, there was whispers in the wind that something might be up. We noticed a little bit more traffic with officers moving back and forth and stuff like that. So found out we were going to go, kind of came as a shock, but then it didn't. And we had to go through all that deployment stuff. And that was kind of all our vehicles shipped over there, yada, yada, yada. But we ended up getting to, we found out we were leaving November 7th. We deployed December 5th. So we got into Saudi Arabia December 5th. So I apologize for getting the dates mixed up.
Oh my gosh.
And then we ended up, getting set for combat operations, doing training, all that kind of stuff like that. So being in an armored cavalry unit is our specialties are reconnaissance and missions like that, where we're a very, it's a armored cavalry regiment is very self-sufficient, very, it's a smaller unit mm-hmm. than a brigade. It's a smaller, it's a fast moving unit. And when we're on the corps level, we were the reconnaissance element and the screening element for the whole corps, which means we were out in front of all the armored divisions and the infantry divisions and doing all that and basically okay. doing the reconnaissance for that. So,
and so what did you do in the unit?
I was part of a scout platoon, which is kind of what it sounds like, reconnaissance and stuff like that. So we had six vehicles in our platoon. There's two scout platoons, two tank platoons, and a mortar platoon, and a headquarter platoon, and one cavalry troop. So okay. I was in first platoon, ghost troop, second squadron, second armored cavalry regiment. So
got it.
We were out doing all sorts of stuff out, you know, training and getting ready to accomplish whatever the mission was going to be. We didn't find out. The air war started, and we were doing security missions and stuff like that. It was all before we moved into Iraq. And what our mission turned out to be was, if people are familiar with it, the Iraqis, they did a lot of diversionary preparatory stuff, thinking, so the Iraqis would think we were going to go directly into Kuwait, when contrary to them, we moved 300 miles to the west and then invaded Iraq, made a what they call a right hook move. We came straight, made a right hook, and then went into Kuwait. While they also did attack directly into Kuwait, but we were kind of doing an end around, like to try and catch them from the side. So what we did was, we were the screening element for the Corps. So we went into Iraq pretty much first before anybody else. We were doing patrols into Iraq to make sure we could get across and make sure that no one that no one detected our movement and all that kind of jazz. So when the ground war actually started, we moved across into Iraq, and we started to move, and we were moving so fast. We were accomplishing all our objectives quick. That's why the timetable got sped up every time we got. The way a big unit moves and the way that things move, they on a map, they put an overlay over it and they call it a phase line. So it's like a grid coordinate. You move up according to the phase line and they code name them. And all ours were, surprise, surprise, named after beer. So phase line Bud, phase line Corona, phase line Miller. Awesome. Yeah, it was pretty cool. So there was a little bit of humor in that because, you know, we were coming from Germany and, you know, military guys have been known to turn up a beer now and then.
Maybe.
So
I've never really heard that, but yeah, okay.
We went into Iraq on the 24th. We started moving up on the 25th. We were moving our objectives. We weren't getting much resistance for a while, and then we started meeting not much resistance. We were meeting a lot of POWs, a lot of guys that were surrendering, a lot of conscripts, and stuff like that. And they weren't really too much of our concern, as far as we were, you know, passing them on to the MPs and security forces. What we were more worried about was the Republican Guard, which was their heavy guys, which was their quote unquote elite units with their best equipment. And they were the ones that like spearheaded the Iran-Iraq war. And then they were the ones that were the first into Kuwait. And so we weren't really taking them very lightly, but our job was to find them, fix them, hold them, and let the other armored units and infantry units come up and kind of be like a fist. We were supposed to hold them in place, find them, fix them, and let the big guys come up and kick them in the ass.
Got it. Okay.
Well, as we were moving on up, we started to, like I said, accelerated our timetable. So the morning of the 26th, we started moving. We were in Iraq. Intel was reporting that their Republican Guard was out in front of us. So what we were doing was it's called a movement to contact, which is you're basically moving until you hit the enemy. So you're moving up according to these phase lines, you know, methodically moving up. And our air units, we have air units attached to us too, but our air units we were hitting a lot of bad weather. There was some sandstorms. Mm-hmm. There was some bad weather. Our air units weren't necessarily as being able to be as capable as they normally are. We had an air squadron attached to us, was the Cobra gunships and scout helicopters. So we were using those as best we could, but we were running into some really bad weather, some rain and stuff like that. So midday, probably noonish, our platoon hit some armored vehicles in front of us, engaged them, killed them, and then we sent up the intel up what their markings were and came back that these were the reconnaissance elements of a Republican Guard division. So they were doing, they were doing counter reconnaissance, which means they were trying to find us. We found them, killed them. We realized that we had the Tarwakana division of the Republican Guard, which is mechanized infantry division, which was which they did have tanks and stuff like that. They were a pretty badass group for the Iraqis.
Right.
We didn't take them very lightly. So as we started moving up, other units off to our left and our right started making contact as well with these elements. Mm-hmm. Eagle Troop was off to, I believe, our left. Mm-hmm. They ended up making a heavy engagement earlier in the afternoon. We got to a phase line on the map, which was the 7-3 East grid line, which was where they said, okay, let's hold there. We're gonna stop there. And they're gonna make decisions based on, you know, more information that they can get. Well, unbeknownst to us, as we were stopped there, the Iraqi 12th Armored Division or 12th Infantry Division, I can't remember which one, was moving out of Kuwait. They were trying to haul ass, like, we had enough, we're out of here. The Republican Guards were moving in to reinforce. And they met up with those guys, and they're like, all right, we're just absorbing you guys in. Okay, you come from that way, we're coming that way, let's go this way. And their reconnaissance elements ran straight into us. When I say they ran straight into us, I mean they ran straight into me. Mm. So we started making heavy contact with armored vehicles, and we were static, so we were on a line. We had the Bradleys out, the tanks out, everything was up on a line, kind of like you would see in an exercise, which is what it seemed like to us. Obviously, our optics and our gunners and our equipment could shoot and see a lot further. We had thermal imaging sights, which could see through all this dust and stuff, mm-hmm. so we could see hot targets. They had passive sights, which means they used lighting and stuff like that. So, and our rounds were obviously, we had better gunnery skills, and but not to say that we were taking fire too. We were pretty much overwhelming them at that point, but. We were getting a lot of action, a lot of contact, and a lot of direct fire towards us. My vehicle was off to the far end of our line, so we were on the south side. We were running north to south. I'm sorry, yeah, it was the east-west grid line, and we were on that grid line, and it was an east grid line, but we were running north to south, if you kind of mm-hmm. get what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
Or east to west, rather. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we were off to the side. We were on the very end. The spot we were at was kind of a wadi area in the desert. You guys have heard wadis. It's like a duney area. It's kind of there's little hidden spots. It kind of looks like sand dunes. We were holding that spot, and we were making sure that, because troop stuff was trying to infiltrate through, and my gunner and my Bradley commander were engaging pretty heavy targets. I was driving at the time, so I was out. I could see what was going on in front of us. They were just slightly elevated, and they could see more than I could. So I was in the.
So you were driving the tank, okay?
I was driving the Bradley, which is, it's not really a tank. It's more of a, it's a lighter. It's not classified as a tank. It was a cavalry fighting vehicle, which it's got a 25 millimeter gun. It's got a tow missile launcher, and it's got a 7.62 machine gun mounted coaxially with the 25 millimeter. Chain gun, which is basically like a giant machine gun, and it shoots armor-piercing rounds, and it shoots high-explosive rounds. It's a 25-millimeter shell.
Okay.
So we were engaging, and then about 4, roughly a little bit after 4 o'clock, there was movement to our front. We took something that sounded like a sledgehammer kind of right off the front of my vehicle, and my gunner was like, what the hell was that? And then we took another round, and that was the one that hit us and hit us right underneath the missile launcher, which was up, when it was a little weaker spot. And immediately we were hit. I knew we were hit bad. My fire suppression system went off, and there was no fire, but my big ass cleared out of that vehicle faster than I probably have moved in my entire life.
Mm, I bet.
So jumped down on the ground, looked up, could see that we were hit. I ran around to the back. I could see that we were smoking. Sergeant Chaffee was outside of his hatch looking up at me. And obviously he had some blood on him, and he didn't look like, I didn't know if he was injured. He had a little burn on him. And then I ran up to our vehicle that was off to our side, which I don't know, maybe was 100 yards away. It seemed like it was a mile. And I do remember this as clear as it was yesterday. I was running and running and running, and all of a sudden these rounds were hitting me. I was like, oh, shit, they're actually shooting at me. And I dove on the ground. I literally remember saying this out loud. What the fuck am I doing here? What the fuck am I doing? And so I crawled up to the other vehicle, banged on the side. I said, we got hit. And then my dumbass ran back. So then when I got back, we pulled Terry out. Terry was in the back. He was our observer, our dismounted scout, and our loader. And he had some shell fragments in his face. He was all bloodied up. Mm-hmm. And then the other vehicle came back. They were covering us. And then by that time, the medic vehicle had come up. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys from the other vehicle, we jumped up on top. And we were still taking fire this whole time. To see Sergeant Mueller, you know, because he was the only one that wasn't accounted for. And then I looked in the hatch and I could see he was obviously dead, mm-hmm. or at least he looked like it to me. And for the longest mm-hmm. time, I kicked myself because I didn't really reach down to see if he had a pulse. But he was opened up on the side of his neck. He was mm-hmm. slumped over the controls. We always, we're not going to risk ourselves for somebody that, you know, I mean, it was
right.
I talked to his parents. I mean, they.
I know you're still close with them.
Yeah, and I could live with my decision. We weren't going to waste. He even said this, you know, if something happens to me, don't risk yourself if I'm already gone. So
yeah,
we were taking fire. We jumped off and then ended up the medevac Terry out, who's a firefighter in Philadelphia now.
Me and him
are still tight. And it's funny how many people in my unit became firefighters. It's crazy.
It's very interesting. Mm-hmm.
As a handful, a pretty good group of us. But anyway, then I ended up riding out the rest of the battle in our sister vehicle, and the one of the biggest bummers of the whole thing was our vehicle wasn't completely destroyed. Sergeant Mueller's body was recoverable and stuff like that. But what happened later on in the night when we ended up fighting this battle for probably eight, nine hours when we really, that's not what we're designed for. We're designed for not our vehicles were running out of ammo, and what happened was the sandstorm, the first infantry division got lost in the sandstorm, and they had trouble getting up to us. And then when they did what is called a passage of lines, which means it's probably one of the most dangerous times in a battle. It's where a unit coming up to relieve you is passing through your lines to engage the enemy. So you've got guys coming up, you've got guys going back, you've got the enemy in front of you. So it can have a tendency to get jumbled, and a lot of friendly fire accidents could happen that way, you know, where you got trigger happy guys coming up and, you know, and it was dark. So what happened to us was my vehicle was still kind of a hot spot, still smoking. One of our tank units was coming up and put a round through our vehicle and completely destroyed it. And there was really not much. I think I've showed you that picture.
Well, so really, when you and I first started talking, you sent me the article and some photos. And because this is radio, they can't see I could post it. But it's a picture of a tank that looks like it got wrung out like a sponge. It's all twisted.
Yeah, that was mine. Yeah, that's
super
what happened
fucked
after.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what happened after. So that wasn't necessarily what I mean, we got hit and we had some damage, but that was a pretty much a catastrophic kill where they shot all the way through it. And then pretty much there wasn't much recoverable from Sergeant Mueller's body, which was sad. That was just a case of mistaken identity. But I guess in one hand, I mean, shit, that could have happened and we could have been in it. And then I wouldn't be here talking to you. But
right.
After that, that's pretty much we passed through the lines. We went back and went to a supply point, and you know, that was a kind of a surreal moment because I got out of the vehicle and everyone, you know, everybody knew we got hit on the net. Everybody knew, you know, radio traffic that we were hit. Everybody knew someone had died. The rumor spread even before I got there that it was me, that I was dead and Terry was dead and everybody was dead. And
that's crazy.
So I had guys coming up to me, you know, and so it was an interesting evening, let me tell you. And then
heavy.
I had a guy that I didn't really get along with too well. He was in the tank platoon, and he came up to me and grabbed me by my face like your dad would do or your grandmother would do and said, dude, don't ever do that to me. And I was like, I thought you didn't like me. He goes, well, I do. So it was kind of, you know, but I didn't have to piggyback on that. I finally got some sleep. And the next day, obviously, they had to get us a new vehicle and, you know, our replacement coming up for Sergeant Moeller. And all of our equipment was gone. And it was, you know, I didn't have any of my clothes. I didn't have any uniforms and everything. But you'd be surprised how many guys, you know, guys are giving you their underwear, their socks.
Something you don't really think about from a civilian side. When we hear these stories, we don't think about that kind of stuff.
It was, you know, we were worried about Terry because Terry got medevaced out. We didn't know how bad he was hit. We found out it was all pretty much superficial. He's, you know, he didn't lose any sight in his eye or anything like that. And then, you know, we had a memorial service and those pictures, I don't know if I've shown you those. Those are really heavy. And they talk about, I mean, combat's combat, you know, and you talk about guys who've seen combat and 1,000-yard stares, and you could see there's a lot of heavy. I mean, these were really good pictures, and they were black and white. Chaplain came up, we did a little memorial service and stuff, and it was pretty heavy. You could see it. And so that was that. And then we, you know, we found out later on that, you know, I don't remember from what day, probably a day later, we had moved into reserve. And they were routing the Iraqis after all that. And we found out that, you know, the war was over after 100 hours. And, we got a new vehicle. We got a new gunner. And we ended up doing our little making sure that they were going, abiding by the ceasefire. And so we were there that was February. So we didn't leave. Well, we went into Kuwait for a little bit. And then we went back to up in Iraq on the Euphrates River and did some, like I said, made sure that we were holding the ceasefire line to make sure that they weren't doing anything they shouldn't have been doing. And then we ended up leaving in April.
What was the date of the actual incident?
February 26th.
Oh, okay.
1991.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, yeah, that's that.
And then, so you left in April and went where? Back to Germany?
Back to Germany. And then we got back to Germany. We had all our vehicles were coming back on the boat. We flew back. And when we got back, you know, we had a few days off. When we got back, it was kind of interesting. We flew back on a Pan Am 747. And I actually got to sit up in the flight deck but the first class lounge because I helped load bags. And everybody was pretty joyful going back. And probably the only time you hear on a flight saying, you know, please return your trays and your seat backs and stow your weapons, you know, on a commercial flight, which is.
Yeah,
you know,
seriously.
So all the flight attendants were, you know, red, white, and blue. And I got to go sit up in the cockpit with the pilots and actually got to see the pyramid. When we flew over Egypt, I happened to be in the cockpit.
Oh.
And we flew over, and you could see the pyramids from the air. It was
from
a 747, which was pretty cool, yeah. So I sat for about, an hour and a half up in the flight deck with the crew, which was really, I got to sit in the captain's seat. It was really neat.
That is cool.
And then when we landed in Frankfurt, and we drove buses back, and all the families and stuff were waiting for us in our little caserne, and they had set up in our barracks just trash cans full of beer. They had pizza waiting for us. We were just so glad to be back, and that was just really cool. And then we had a couple days off to get situated, and they were integrating us back into just kind of a work thing. We did some half days for about a couple weeks, and then they gave us about a week or so, and then they gave us like a week off, and a busload of us went to Spain for a week. So that was pretty fun.
Sounds like trouble, yeah.
Yeah, well, it was actually a lot of fun. And then when we came back, we started getting back into the swing of stuff. Our vehicles got there. We had a lot of stuff we had to do, and then, you know, they had to get all the awards together and all the, you know, it was inventories of everything. And
then
everybody started getting orders to leave because a lot of guys were ready to during Desert Storm, were supposed to have PCS back to another base. So guys got extended because usually you're in Germany for only 2 years. And like I was there 2.5 because they extended you. And so guys were getting ready to transfer, and unit was getting broken up a little bit because a lot of guys were leaving. And so it was. You know, it was kind of a challenge.
How much longer were you in the Army after that?
Let's see. I got out in January of 1993. I spent a year and some change at Fort Polk, Louisiana, and that definitely helped facilitate me getting out of the Army because that place was a shithole. not the base itself was old and it was just run down. Good guys, but yeah, you know, you take a surfer kid from California and put him in Louisiana, it's, and you know, with the exception of New Orleans and mine and Dave's escapade to New Orleans, which that's a whole nother show in itself.
No,
you know,
kidding.
That.
Probably one that should air. Yeah.
Yeah, that should be for adult ears only. But but yeah, and it was a good place to be. It was a rundown old base. And what I say, going from my unit in Germany was like playing for the major leagues, and then going to Fort Polk was like being in the demoted down to the minors, you know.
I had some other friends who were stationed in Germany, and they kind of all say the same thing about Germany.
You know, yeah, it was, but the unit itself, my unit was such a high speed unit as far as we had a real world mission doing the border. You know, we had a lot of good, it was a lot of good friends. And like I say, you know, we talk about social media, and one of the best things social media has ever done was bring us together on Facebook, because we had a 20 year and a 25 year reunion. And I didn't make the 20 year, but they did that in Washington, D.C., and they actually, Terry and Sergeant Mueller's parents laid a wreath at the Unknown Soldier's tomb. Mm-hmm. And then we did the 25, and I made that one in Las Vegas. And that was really, really cool. That was a really neat, you know, a lot of our guys that went on to bigger things. General McMaster was the troop commander for Eagle Troop, and he ended up being on, you know, President Trump's, he was his national security advisor. And, you know, and General McGregor, or Colonel McGregor's written books, and it's been, you know, a lot of guys that stayed in the military went on to pretty good careers. And did a lot of stuff. You know, General McMaster, I called him a blowhard for the longest time because I called him a self-promoter, you know, and I mean, I even called him that to his face. We joke around, but I mean, he was a good troop commander. Our unit just didn't get the exposure that he did because he was in such a, he taught at the war college. He taught at West Point. He got the exposure, you know, and with the book being written about us, it's pretty cool. But yeah, me and General McMaster had a good little laugh in Vegas together. So, you know, and it was neat because, you know, and I mean, regardless of politics aside, it's really neat to meet somebody that's involved in the government like that, you know, it's like anything else. It's just like anything else. We don't know what goes behind the scenes. And so it was really neat to talk to him and, you know, see that he's just a normal person. Then that he went on to such a successful career, you know, and a lot of the guys, you know, we've had our guys that have gone through their hard times, and we've lost guys over the years to, hold on, I'm getting a little teary out here. You know, we've lost guys to PTSD, and we've lost guys to suicide. You know, we've lost guys to stuff like that, but we social network really well, and you know, because I've told you, I've talked to some of the guys, you know, and it's
the brotherhood is a real thing, and it exists in the fire departments too. So I just have so much admiration for that. I don't know what the word is I'm looking for. It's a brotherhood where you guys really do have each other's backs, and I've interviewed. You're the third veteran I've interviewed on my show, and the awareness around PTSD and suicide is kind of one of my passions in life, and it always has been. So I am happy to kind of give that a platform from somebody who's been there, you know. So, okay, Veterans Day. So what does that mean to you? What does that mean to the guys, you know, like what is the meaning there for you guys?
I don't know. I guess, I mean, I can only speak for myself. I don't know. It's like you said, it's hard to talk about because I don't really talk about it that much. To me, it's just, you know, to me, and I'm not trying to be humble, I'm not trying to just make it seem like I'm all cool, but I mean, it's just, I had a job. I felt obligated to serve the country, and, you know, and I did, and I'm proud of what I did, but it, you know, to me, I was just doing what you're supposed to do. I don't, you know, like everybody asked about, you know, our awards and medals, and I'd like to be honest with you. I mean, I don't really care about that stuff. I care about that for my boys and for you and my mom and my sisters and stuff like that, because they're proud of it. But to me, I got to come home, you know, like Andy didn't and other guys didn't. I know compared to what the war is now with thousands of people being killed, you know, we lost 130 some guys, but, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, one life's a life. And you know, whether you agree or disagree with what's going on now, I mean, I'll say this to my dying day. Mm-hmm. You know, we should have stayed over there and taken care of everything when we could, but that wasn't our mandate. And mm-hmm. Bush Senior did what he said he was going to do. And he, you know, did what he was going to do and pulled out. And I think that cost him his second term because.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. You know,
but to me, though, I don't know. Veterans Day, like I said, we've had this discussion. You hear people say Happy Memorial Day and you hear people say Happy Veterans Day. I don't get as pissed off as some people do when people say Happy Memorial Day. I just think people don't know how to – they don't know
acknowledge
how to
it.
Memorialize. They don't know how to – people do not like days of mourning. So, no. And Memorial Day is a day of remembrance and a day of mourning, and it really is. And it's – and so – you know,
we've made it into this commercial barbecue holiday. Happy Memorial Day. Okay,
well,
sure.
I mean, I don't dispute that. I don't dispute people wanting to make something good out of a tragedy, as long as their heart's in the right place and they know what the day's for. And that comes with, you know, getting informed about it. Yeah. But as far as Veterans Day go, to me, Veterans Day is a day of celebration. I love when people tell me Happy Veterans Day and they know I'm a veteran, even though I might not express it. I'm happy for all the veterans that I was with. I mean, it's a corny line, but it rings true. And it rings true because Dick Winters was the commander of Easy Company, 506th Parachute Regiment, 101st Airborne, World War II, Band of Brothers, that whole thing.
Oh, okay.
And his grandson asked him a question. And it rings true. And I would say it the same way. He asked him, Grandpa, were you a hero in the war? He goes, no, but I served with heroes.
Mm, yeah.
And I
you
mean,
guys would all say that about each other. That's what's beautiful about it. Yeah.
And that's the way I look at it. I mean, you know, I was just one guy doing my thing. I dealt with survivor's guilt. I thought, oh, shit, maybe I could have moved the vehicle after we got hit. Maybe, you know, blah, blah, blah. Sergeant Chaffee dealt with the survivor's guilt because he was in charge. He lost the guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't his fault. We all know that, but that doesn't make it any harder on him, you know, and I've talked to him for hours and he's still dealing with it. You know, he's still dealing with it. He has a hard time with it.
Yeah.
Terry and I have talked in depth, you know, because the night before Andy died, we sat, had a bunch of POWs and we were under a big artillery. There was an artillery barrage and a battle going off in front of us to the side, actually. And, you know, that was one of the best talks I've ever had with Sergeant Mullen. And I shared that with his parents when they came to Germany.
Wow.
You know, and I mean, I won't share that conversation with really anybody. I mean, that's, you know, I keep that one to myself. That was me, him and Terry, but the gist of it was, you know, if we were going to die and we died for each other, that's noble, you know?
Yeah.
But Veterans Day to me, I don't know, you know, I internalize a lot. And I don't let a lot out, but I mean, it's a day to remember the veterans and it's a day to remember all the veterans. Mm-hmm. You know, I've talked to guys in the VA and I've talked to people. I mean, I talked to a friend of mine, he's a counselor and he goes, dude, I got guys from World War II. I'm getting guys from Korea that are coming in their 80s and 90s wanting to talk.
Good.
You know? And, you know, PTSD, it kills people. And
it doesn't just go away. You know, yeah.
None, and people deal with it differently. And I'm sure I've got a lot of shit rattling around in my head that I haven't dealt with, and that from work you know, and I know a lot of firefighters. I know guys who have retired from this stuff, but you know, mm-hmm. that macho thing, you don't want to be weak. And now it's starting to be okay. It's not weak, you know, it's being strong to ask for help.
Yeah.
But I don't mean to digress, but like with Veterans Day, I mean, I thank the veterans. I've always thanked the veterans, and you saw it when I did that.
Yeah, was a point I was going to make. Like, you don't ever wear anything that indicates that you were ever, you know, in the Army or anything. But if you see someone who is, so we were on vacation, we were at the hotel, and we were walking along some corridor, and it was us and the kids, and, you know, we're all talking, and all of a sudden Pat, like, stops and does this, like, handshake
He had a Desert Storm hat or a t-shirt on. A hat, that's right.
And I couldn't hear what you guys said to each other, but I just kept walking and I just started bawling. It makes me cry.
Well, what I said to him was he had a Desert Storm veteran hat on, and I said, hey, thanks for your services. I was a Desert Storm vet too. And he said, thanks for yours. And that was pretty much it. We shook hands, you know.
You guys did the manly hug thing, and that was it. But I've seen you do that a number of times.
Well,
if it's not babies, it's veterans.
You caught me.
The babies and the vets. Yeah, that was really special for me. Anyway, I feel like Veterans Day is such an undersold
national
holiday.
Think Veterans Day,
it should be one of the major holidays, and it's this one that we kind of push off to the side Monday.
I think because people now are so right or wrong, left or right, conservative or liberal, people are so caught up in what's going on, like politically and this and that. They're not thinking about, you know, okay, yeah, we're caught up in, we're still fighting some wars, but that doesn't, you might not agree with the war, but you can't, you have to support your troops.
I agree.
You know? And I mean, I have my thoughts on what's going on. You have your thoughts on what's going on. And I still know people over there, and I still work for the government. You know, I support a lot of what's going on as far as in my job. But that doesn't mean, you know, like, I love seeing Vietnam vets and Korean vets and stuff like World War II vets, and actually being able to talk to them and going to, you want to know what I think everybody needs to experience is go to a VFW, an American Legion.
Seriously.
And talk to these guys.
They're amazing.
And they, just like anything else, they undersell what they did to hear about your exploits, and you undersell your exploits to hear about theirs. And, but Veterans Day to me is a day to celebrate. It's a day to thank veterans and to thank the, you know, present veterans and to thank the current and the past veterans. Think guys are in the service now and think people that are not. And I feel fortunate that I still work and support the military. Cause I mean, you know, in my job, I mean, I work for the DOD and I'm a firefighter for the DOD. And that means that I support my public is the military, you know?
Right.
And the way I've told them is whenever, you know, something happens and we have to like do a fire inspection, we tell them stuff. I was like, hey, you guys got enough to worry about in your other job. When you're out there doing your job, you know, we want to keep you safe, you know, on the base. So
yeah,
it's a day to celebrate. And I think you're right. I think it needs to be more, people need to see more, but you know, it's the people that get caught up in what the political, whatever their political thing is. And they can't put that aside for a day to say, okay, you know what, this is a day for the troops. I don't care what my allegiance or what my political backing is. This is a day to put that shit aside and support the troops.
Yeah. I don't know anybody personally who lets their politics, you know, influence how they feel about veterans.
I've seen it, you know.
It would piss me off if I did, but I think that, you know, whoever's listening to this interview, if they could just take a moment to make it a little more significant in their lives, because I think we just take it so for granted. Yeah. Most of us are grateful, but I think we could just do just a little bit more. And so if that means taking a trip to the, you know, VFW and,
take a virtual tour. If you can't make it, take a virtual tour of Arlington National Cemetery. Mm-hmm. And if you want to see, or go to any military cemetery.
My uncle is buried. He had a full military honors funeral a few years ago, and he's at the funeral out here. I can't think of the name of it. It's so humbling, and it's so small compared to some of the national ones.
Well, they're really amazing. I've been to Arlington. I've been to the Omaha Beach in France, and I've been to the one in Luxembourg where Patton's buried. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's, you know, everybody knows who Patton is. And thank you for that book, by the way. And, you know, Patton was, you know, that Patton died overseas, and he, you know, they weren't bringing anybody home to bury in Arlington. He wanted to be buried in Arlington, West Point, one or the other, but his wife said, no, let's bury him with his troops that he led during the Battle of the Bulge. And they put him out front, so he was still leading his troops. And it's pretty humbling to see that, you know, those fields of crosses and stuff, you know, I mean,
we're lucky.
And, you know, a lot of people have died to protect what we've got, you know.
Absolutely. And I think that's why it should be a much more of a thing than it currently is. You know, there's the oddball parade here and there. And, you know, the schools, my kid's school is really good about acknowledging
it. So is Alex's school. He's getting ready to do a play, too.
I know. We all wish that we could drag you to our kids. Alex wants to take you to school. Mandy wants to take you to school. That would be cool. But anyway, well, I know that it's – I have to not cry while I say this. I'm a fucking radio professional. I appreciate you taking the time to do this with me. I know it's sometimes hard, and I love you. Thank you.
Can I end it with one thing?
Yeah. So
for the listeners out there, if you see a veteran, whether it means anything to you, it means something to them. Go up and thank them.
Yeah.
Go up and thank them, whether you believe in it or not. They need it. They might need it, because veterans are hurting out there.
That's right.
So.
Yeah.
But.
All right. Well, I think that's a good way to wrap it up. Well said, babe. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And you're a badass. Love you.
Love you.
So. Anyway. All right. Well, that was good. So. Do your American duty this weekend for Veterans Day and think of it and fly your flag and be a good person. Oh, my God. I'm just a ball bag. You did that.
I don't know if you've noticed, you haven't been down there, but Julie and Dan, have you noticed they fly an American flag every day?
I do. I have noticed. Yeah.
And on Veterans Day, Dan flies that thing proudly. And Julie says it's because of me. And I'm like, no, it's because Dan's just, you know, Dan loves the country regardless of what he thinks, you know, politically, but
he's very proud of you.
I know, but I hope everybody's flying a flag and is flying it for all the veterans, you know?
That's right. Yep. Amen. And thank you. All right. On that note, we will wrap it up. Thanks everybody for listening and have a great weekend. Mwah.